It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hi there. Thank you very much for allowing us into your lives here with the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker and Ed Rudell today. And in our first hour, we're going to switch things around a little bit. We're going to be answering some of the questions that you've been asking and also talk about fixing some malware that's out there right now. Listen closely and watch our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net. Let me get rid of those bugs for you yet. Thank you once again for allowing us to join you here at the Internet Advisor. And if you have just kind of rumbled in here, don't forget that our homepage, InternetAdvisor.net, will contain a whole bunch of information on our show notes, about our program today. Especially this first hour, we've got a bunch of things we're going to point you to there at InternetAdvisor.net. Let me first of all point you to the folks in the studio here. Mr. Gary Baker, how you doing, Gary?
I'm doing great. You know, we're just scurrying around cutting Ed's birthday cake.
That's right.
And you go to our InternetAdvisor.net homepage, you're going to see Ed smiling with his birthday cake.
Thank you, Gary, for bringing that in. Yeah, just one more. And I had a great, I wasn't here last weekend, but I had a great time in Grand Rapids, and that's where I spent my birthday with the it was a state honors choir performance at the DeVos Center, and Brandonwood, the school systems, they had six students performing there. And that was great. I mean, it's just good to see so many parents and the children enthusiastic about stuff like that. Yeah. And they're sitting to a hall that seats 2,500 people. It's just amazing.
Wow, that must be someone. Very talented young people, by the way. I've had the privilege of judging that your contest out there, the talent contest.
Yeah. Oh, and that's true. When they do their idol competition out there, and we saw a couple of the other third degree Burns people. My son participates with Gary Burns. Yep. Third degree Burns did not even realize that their school systems also participate in the Michigan, music scholastic program or whatever like that. Because not all schools do.
No, it's great. It's great that they do, and great that the state supports something like that too.
That was great.
Hey guys, this first hour of the program, we're going to kind of focus. Normally, the second hour of the program is the one where we take phone calls or answer email questions that are coming in. We're going to flip it around a bit today for a number of reasons, but basically this first hour we're going to talk about some of the malware that's out there and some of the fixes, and then we're also going to take some questions that people have given us emails on. But Gary, before we get too far into this, I wanted you, as somebody who has been involved in the IT business for a long time and kind of on the enterprise side, to talk a little bit about the results that came out, the big financial results came out this week for Microsoft and Apple and Samsung. And what was interesting, and I don't really understand, because the figures for Apple, they're making money hand over fist, and yet all the analysts are wringing their hands, and it's like, what could possibly be wrong with making billions of dollars in profit?
Well, you know, you have two things going on. First of all, what's the health of the company? And the company is very healthy.
Yes.
Right? Sitting on a lot of cash, sitting on a pipeline of sales, good products. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some products. You find that there's people that think they're the best, and they are in some ways, and maybe not in other ways, but they're great products, and they've got a great pipeline, and they've got, you know, a great future prospect.
But isn't
the problem is that separate from how well the company's doing are the expectations of the investors.
Yeah.
And a company like Apple, which kind of touches the hearts and minds of so many fanboys and others out there.
Now with the iPad, lots of people beyond the fanboys.
And people, they just think, oh, well, it's going to go up, and they bid the price of the stock way past.
Yeah, it went up almost, was it above $700, I think,
last year. And it's dropped down 25%.
Yeah.
So the people that were buying it as fanboys without looking at the fundamentals of the company and understanding what's happening, you know, so they lost some money on the stock.
You know, but
that's speculation.
That's a great point, is how it's bid up like that, and then now it's going back to more realistic values.
Yeah.
And it sort of reminds me what happened.
It's still, you know, a huge
one of
market
the biggest,
value.
I think one of the biggest cash piles in the world for a company, I think. They beat Exxon again this year, didn't they?
Not anymore.
Not from a cash standpoint. And they may have, but that's not what was really the point. Mm. What they did was revenue was higher.
Yeah.
Exxon is now higher again, isn't it?
Yes.
You know. Oh, okay.
And what, you know what I was going to say? This sort of reminds me of what they did with Facebook. Remember how when Google came out and other core IPOs came out, the opening value was so low that people would jump on it right away and it would double within the first day. It was like playing the lottery if you can get in there quick enough. Well, with Facebook, they actually put a realistic value in there.
Yep.
I believe it was something like $37. $38. Mm-hmm. And everyone was hoping it would come in at 17, and that way it could bid up in that first 24 hours, and they could double their profits.
Yeah.
And
so that's a little bit of the shell game we're watching now. Now, one of the things
the important part that Ed brings up, which is the money normally would, if it went out at 17 and got bid up to, you know, 36, let's say, the money that goes to the company is $17 a share. The rest goes to speculators. Well, when it comes out at 32 and it only goes up a few points, then 32 goes to the company and the speculators don't get as much. Now, play a game with, you got to get the speculators making money so that they continue to invest in the stock. And there's all sorts of other games like that. But the company itself, went on the Facebook IPO, ended up with more money because it came out at a higher price.
Now, quickly for you, one of the criticisms that I see coming out of Apple is precisely the concern about the future. You know, they produced all these game-changing kind of things, the iPhone in 2007 and the iPad was a couple years ago, which revolutionized their segments, and everybody's kind of saying, yeah, you've made a ton of money. Yes, as a matter of fact,
you're going to continue to make
a ton
of money.
Well, their Mac sales are down. It was interesting. Their PC sales are down. What are you going to do in the future? And that seems to be some of the fear that's out there.
Yeah, and it sells magazines. It sells eyeballs going to the online blogs and whatnot. So,
well,
you know, of course, Apple's still a great company. It's starting to get down to the point where you can make an investment in Apple again.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. But when we come back, we'll also talk about some nasty malware out there and some of the cures that we have found this week. Continue listening. It's the Internet Advisor. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell. And just to kind of put a bow on things, we talked about the earnings reports that came out. We chatted a little bit in the break about this, but one of the things I saw, an interesting article, was saying that both Samsung and Apple are being questioned. They're both had incredible quarters, lots of money coming in, but they're also beginning to see kind of a little, there's a little mist on the horizon that says there's competition out there, even for you big guys. And there's a sense of you can't sell that much, much more.
Right.
You know, you see, like with stock prices, the whole business about selling more and more all the time is going to come down, except that they were saying that the international markets, China and India, will be very big players in this next round of what gets gobbled up.
You know, what you have to realize, too, is that we're talking about market capitalization. Right, so
explain that.
Apple has, it's the stock price times the number of shares outstanding.
Okay,
right. That's the value of the company,
the hardcore value,
right? And the stock price is based on who thinks it's going to have an upswing and it's going to be worth more.
It's a gamble, basically,
right?
Gambling,
speculation, right? So when you look at Microsoft has a lot more revenue than Apple does.
Explain that. What is revenue then?
Revenue is the money they make, the take in. That's the total top line minus their expenses becomes
the
net revenue, and then there's other things in the
profit,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But But revenue is the amount of money that they take in.
So they have
when they
more.
Sell their
Microsoft
products.
Actually has more money coming in.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And there's lots of companies that have more money coming in than Apple. Mm-hmm. Apple has a bigger stock, has a bigger market
margin
cap.
Up, yeah.
Market capitalization. They have they're worth more because the share price is very high, and the times the number of shares determines market value.
All right.
Right.
Listen.
So that's, and it's speculators that make that. It's not amount of revenue. It's not how big they are. It's not how much they sell. It's about how people view their stock and what they're willing to pay. Now, a lot of people have said, oh, we better get out of Apple. It's, you know, since the iPhone 5 has come out, since September, Apple stock has decreased by 25%.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So people say, oh, my God, I got to get out. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Was it worth over $700 per share? Probably not, since it's gone down by 25%.
Yeah.
But you're making a decision about today, right?
Yeah.
And it's what did it close at? On Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it worth that today? Might be. In fact, it might be worth the high fives or six, right? So just because the stock price has gone down recently doesn't mean that you should sell. You need to make a decision based on what you think the future earnings of the company will be.
As you talk, I can see why this is above my pay grade. So I don't invest.
So the other thing is, Microsoft also pays dividends, and Apple, you know, their dividends haven't paid many dividends.
Mm.
That's
very
interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. Hey, let's talk about something else in the news this week, and that was good news. The bad guys got bit. This Gozi virus that's been out there, G-O-Z-I, started, I think,
it's an old virus.
It's been out there for a long
time. But they finally caught three of the guys that were the main instigators.
And
so that's good.
Two of them are outside the country. They're all foreign nationals, I think, Russians, Ukrainians. But one of them was caught inside the U.S. The other two are being extradited to the U.S. But thankfully, we got some of them behind bars and millions of dollars stolen in terms of data.
Yeah. And they were selling some of their technology to other hackers. So, you know, it's not.
They were marketing their misery around.
Right. So they're going to hang them by their toenails, right?
Well, if you saw my rant.
Some of us would like that to happen. But I thought I'd put that out there and also talk about two instances of viruses that I ran into my family this week. And fortunately, I was able to get both of them cured. But Ed, have you heard? Well, both of you have heard of ransomware, haven't you?
Yes.
Of course, yep.
Ed, just explain basically what ransomware is.
Well, ransomware is a virus that's put on, or a Trojan that's put on your computer, and it either tricks you into paying money to remove the software, basically, or it blatantly just comes out, says, we have control of your computer, and we're not going to relinquish it until you pay this dollar amount.
Yeah.
And then even if you do pay that dollar amount, they're going to try to sucker you into it again and again and again, usually.
Exactly, because they are the virus.
Yes.
Right.
And they don't remove anything except maybe a few things that the dummy things that they put up there. Well, this has really been nasty. And my daughter on the kid's computer, one of the kids had gone to a site. And by the way, these things happen not because you've been to bad places necessarily. But
certainly that's part of it.
That's part of it.
Yes.
But in some cases, they have been able to inject this poison into websites.
Or advertising or something.
And advertising, almost any, and a picture. Sometimes.
Pictures.
And then what happens is that you go to that site, and without having done anything bad, all of a sudden, boom, you've got this infection. The good news, by the way, folks, is with the FBI ransomware. Now, Eddie, this was on an old Gateway computer that my granddaughter had been using, and my daughter as well.
Yeah.
We had bought it, must be 6-7 years old. It was running XP, and it had locked up completely.
Yes.
And so what I did was I tried two of our favorites, and that was Malwarebytes, and I ran that first. And then the other one I ran was CombiFix.
Yes.
Because Malwarebytes didn't get it all.
So it identified it, but when you rebooted, it still came back.
It didn't even identify it.
Oh, okay.
That was another one I'll tell you about.
Sure.
But I had to run.
And we do know this. That's why we do suggest you have both and use both.
Yes, I wanted to make that point. Folks, when you hear about Malwarebytes, as we are talking about it all the time, you may say, I used it and didn't get everything. Very often we find that that happens, and then I use CombiFix, which, Ed, we've got that up in our toolbox, right? In our toolkit?
Yes.
Okay. If you go to internetadvisor.net and go up to the toolkit, which is the third button on that red bar at the top, if you click on that, look in there for Combo Fix. It's a very, it's a rather sophisticated one.
Yes.
And you'll see like a black screen come up and white letters running on it and think, what's going on? Basically, it's just doing its work. When it was done, vroom, gone. It rebooted the machine, and my daughter, I just checked with her before I came in here, and it's working perfectly. Now, the other one that hit, and I don't know if either of you guys have heard this, is a search bar virus called Sweetim. S-W-E-E-T-I-M, or Sweet
or
I-M.
Or Sweet I-M.
Sweet,
okay.
Sweet I-M, whichever it may be. That one was just kind of annoying, because what it would do is, every time my son-in-law would try to do a search on their computer, it would come up, not Google, it would come up Sweet IM.
Yes.
And it would direct you to certain places. So it wasn't doing damage to your machine so much as it was feeding itself off.
That would be real annoying.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely annoying. And so my son-in-law tried to get rid of it. And I came over and I had used Malwarebytes. I used CombiFix. We thought we got rid of it. We rebooted it, Ed, and what happens? Boom. It's still there.
It's still there?
Now, tell the folks, why do you think it would still be there, even though you've used two powerful malware bytes?
Well, because obviously their malware bytes or combo fix wasn't tailored to actually remove that type of attack. So that's why on the Internet Advisor, the first thing I recommend when you have something like that is to perform a system restore immediately when something like that happens.
Good.
Go back a couple days and then download one of these utilities, combo fix or malware bytes, and scan your computer. That way, at least your computer's in a functional state. The Trojan or the virus, or like you said, this Sweet IM, is still there. The executable is probably still there on the computer, but it's just not in the registry anymore, and it's not configured to run at startup.
That's
and everything.
That's the key. The registry is kind of like the underlying instructions to the computer on how to run things. Am I right?
Everything.
It runs everything. That's the instructions.
It's a database about all the software on your computer.
So here's what happened. I went online with Google, and I was able, with my computer, was able to find a website, which I have put on our homepage, and you'll find it there next to Sweet IM, the search toolbar, Malwarebytes, plus a special web page. And if you click on that, it'll take you off. This is a young man. I'm not exactly sure where he's from, but he has developed this entire page of instructions on how to get rid of it. And here's the key. Way down at the bottom of it, there's a little piece of software you download to your computer. It scrubs out and gets those things and roots them out and then gets rid of itself. Poof.
So it's
gone.
A targeted program to remove that
very
specific
targeted
virus. Good.
So
Good.
Go to our homepage, click on that Sweetim, and then the special webpage, and you'll see that there. We'll come back and answer some questions for our folks out there. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell. And if you just tuned in, what we're doing is kind of reversing our order. We normally take our second hour to answer questions that people have sent in. But we're going to be doing a special on the auto show and on the futures of automobiles coming up in our second hour. So please do stay tuned for that. That will be coming up, and it will be live on our flagship station in Detroit. We have Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau who will be here with us, as well as Dr. Justin Colvin talking about the future of cars. It's a fascinating discussion. I hope you do come in. The International Auto Show, the North American International Auto Show, is wrapping up this weekend. For those who may be hearing this later on, it'll be interesting in any case talking with Paul and with Dr. Colvin, because we're talking about the implications of what's been shown here at the auto show, and I think that'll be very interesting.
That's right. And Justin will actually talk to us a little bit about the automated vehicle initiatives that are happening.
Yes.
And what that could mean in the future.
Yeah, there's one going on in Ann Arbor. It's been going on for a couple of years, hasn't it?
3,000 vehicles are taking part in that one. Google obviously has a fully automated vehicle they run around.
Yep.
And there's a number of other things that are going on as well. Continental is right here, one of the big auto suppliers, is very involved in some of the automation. And they're all different. They're all kind of but it's starting to, you know, to coagulate, you know, where we're starting to see some of these technologies starting to work together. So that's going to be a fascinating time, and it'll be just after the end of this hour. Mm-hmm. We'll start the start of the next hour.
Excellent.
We'll talk about that.
So what we're going to do, folks, in this hour, we've received a number of emails to us directly to the show. Now, by the way, if you'd like to do that, simply go to internetadvisor.net, and there's a Contact Us form there. Click on that button and just fill in the information, and it'll be coming up to us, and they will be happy to help you with that. Or, by the way, during the week, our forums are open, and there are people who are sitting there who are throughout the week looking to help people. So please do use the forums there off the homepage. Ed or Gary, do you have one you want to pick up to start with?
I actually don't have a list in front of me. So why don't you read them off and pretend.
Okay. All right. Here's one that came from a guy named Tom, and it's about browser security. He says, I recently heard that there's a security risk with Internet Explorer 6, 7, and 8. I have XP on my desktop and cannot update to IE 9 or 10. That is the Internet Explorer 9 or 10, which go actually with Windows 7 and Windows 8.
Right.
That's 10 is with Windows 8. I'm currently using Mozilla Firefox as my browser, but still have Internet Explorer. Am I still at a security risk if I still have Internet Explorer but don't use it? Is it possible to uninstall Internet Explorer without damaging my computer? Thanks for your help. So how do you want to take that apart? Because it actually talks about a number of things.
Well, obviously the question is no, you are not vulnerable if you... if you're not using Internet Explorer. If your default browser is Firefox or Chrome, which do install in Windows XP, and it's really based on your default browser.
Right.
So, I think and there is a way of uninstalling them, but you probably don't want to do that.
Right. The vulnerability they're talking about here, that Tom's
talking about.
Well,
there's always vulnerabilities.
Yes, with the Internet Explorer, because it's compatible.
So it's old news.
Yeah. So, yes, it is. Yes, Tom, it is vulnerable, but I think if you've got good security otherwise, you're not necessarily going to be at any particular risk. And I think a lot of this is around the scare tax, the scare around Java, isn't it? The Java?
You know, we don't know what he's talking
about. Yeah, he's not specifying it.
It could be a long... But there are vulnerabilities that are identified in all of the browsers on any given week. And then they fix them.
So how do we handle that? You know, that you're right. Each one of the browsers has some, Firefox will have some problems, or Chrome.
Make sure you continue to update your browsers when the new update comes out, because all the, you know, every time Microsoft releases a fix, it's usually to fix some sort of security hole.
Right.
And then keep your antivirus up to date, your malware, anti-malware up to date. Make sure your firewall's on and working properly. But... You know, the chances are that if he hasn't updated, there probably is something out there that if with an update it could fix
it. Because patches are continually being put
out. Right.
But also, he's using Firefox. There's probably, if he's not patching Firefox, there's probably vulnerabilities there as
good,
well.
Good point.
Right? In fact, there are vulnerabilities there.
And the point I wanted to make is it's almost impractical. If you're running a computer running Windows XP and it's shipped with XP and you tried even running Internet Explorer 8 or 9, it's not even worth surfing the Internet using Internet Explorer XP. It's so slow.
Yeah, they identified problems specifically with Internet Explorer 8 and XP.
Oh, it's just so slow. So my wife made the switch years ago to Chrome or Firefox. So that's just the point I wanted to make.
Yeah, and as Ed said, Tom, if you're not using the Internet Explorer, you're not vulnerable. Nothing's going to happen to you necessarily because of any weaknesses there. But keep in mind what Gary said, which is Firefox and Chrome both also as alternatives, or Opera or Safari, all of them need to be updated. So you're not going to, pardon me, escape the problems if you're not updating. So that's, we can take one off the list there with that. One of the things that came up is kind of an interesting question here. He says that I have a contract with a computer service, a company based in the United States called ITOK, iTalk. I'm not familiar with that myself. They're very good to me since I am the least computer savvy person, and they've always taken good care of me. Do you know who they are, and what do you think about them? And I thought we'd use this maybe just to talk about security in general, but... Have either of you had any contact with these or have heard of this before?
No, but, but Shane used to work with a company that they sold service, and they actually provided 24/7 service to people for their PCs. And it could be somewhere geographically in Michigan, or it could be somewhere. They happen to be a Michigan-based company at the time. And they would remote into the person's computer and if they had a contract. So, I mean, that sort of sounds like what this gentleman had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are a number of products out there now that if you take and allow someone to put that little program on your computer, you call them up and they say, look, we're going to send you something.
Right.
They send something to you, you take and install it, and then they can go ahead and remote in and fix the problem. Companies have been doing that
for years,
right? Yeah. Now it's starting to become reasonable to actually do this, you know, do this as tech support for consumers.
I might say, by the way, Microsoft does this. I have Windows 8 on my wife's computer. Right. We were having some problems with it, with the printer. The Microsoft tech did exactly that. He said, may I have permission to come into your computer and take it over and work on it? Ed, I know you've done that remotely.
Right,
with
right.
Computers
it's very
too.
Frustrating. I have a hard time letting go. So I had to call the help desk, and they had to, sir, can I remote into your computer? And I don't want to give the old song and dance like, I know what I'm doing, you know, no. We just go ahead. You know, I still want to go through that argument. So I let them do their thing, and but a gentleman I work with, he installed Office 2010 or 2013 on his home computer, and he had to get Microsoft in there. And unfortunately, Microsoft wiped out all his PST files.
Ooh.
So if you're thinking that you're working with experts, you are usually, but even they can make mistakes. And this tech, Phil, that I work with, he was like, I knew I should have backed those up. So just don't assume that the people you're working with have as much experience or knowledge as you do. You know your computer. You know what's valuable to yourself. So ask the questions. I need to save my contacts first if you're going to work on my computer. Are my photos going to be
very
safe?
Good point.
So don't be afraid to ask those, and don't assume that person on the other end is going to think of that.
So I'm just looking at iTalk, and they've been around since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Their world headquarters are in Utah, but they have also headquarters in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would assume that it's a decent company if they've been around that long, but I have not gone to the next point, which is, go find out what other people are saying about
that. Now, let's rather than commenting on iTalk, let's do exactly what you're doing, Gary, and tell people about the process you would go through. So,
sure.
Which is essentially, like, for instance, what I did was I Googled for iTalk space reviews.
Right.
And then, boom, I got to CNET had a review on there. There are a whole list of other reviews, so you can read that. And then, if you can, get to some place where you see people who have been users to give response as well, knowing that sometimes those can be
careful,
juggled.
But it all feeds what you're doing, which is creating a profile to say, should I or should I not?
You get a bigger picture that way. But you carefully look into those things. Don't just buy any plan. Do your research, as we're saying here.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that the person I was talking about here, Tom, I think it is.
Yes, Tom.
Marion was the person we were talking about. Anyway, Tom, Marion, if this company has been working for you and worked effectively for you and your computer is running well, God bless you. Keep on going. Because apparently they're coming in and doing it remotely.
Right.
If you're looking into a service like this, do your homework ahead of time.
Right. And obviously he's paying a fixed amount for that per month or per year.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that meets his criteria and he's willing to pay that for the service he's receiving. Sounds like he's quite happy with it.
And then keep in mind, by the way, like with Microsoft, with Windows 8, I had free Microsoft support service for 90 days. So you may have free service as well because of your software or your hardware. Hey, back with more questions from our listeners in just a moment. Hi there. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Rudellin here. What we're doing this hour, it's kind of the reverse of what we do. Normally, our first hour, we have guests on. The second hour, we answer questions. We're doing a little bit different because of some programming that's going on here at our flagship station in Detroit. But we've been answering some questions on email that have come to us. And if you would like to ask us a question, there's two things you can do. You can go to the Contact Us form on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. It's on the top and to the right. Or you can go to the forums. And in the forums, you'll find people there all week long 24/7, you'll find somebody in there who can take a look at your question and take a crack at answering it. I want to thank, by the way, there's just a bunch of people in there who are helping out. And to name one, we would slight a whole bunch of other people, but thank you so much for doing that. Very experienced and generous tech users who get in there and help people to kind of sort through their problems. But right now, we're taking some of the emails that we have received through our Contact Us form, and we're going through them and seeing if we can get some answers for people on the air here. All right, Ed and Gary. Jerry has asked a question about a file called X17-75238. He says, can you tell me what that file is and why it is on my desktop? Do I need to keep it on my desktop or at all? I have Office 2010 installed, and apparently it's connected in some way to it. What's the thoughts?
So is it X17...
Dash 75238.
And I think 75238.
And I Googled that real quick because I wasn't sure. I was going X17. That sounded like a Dell monitor or something. But that's actually, and he even said it, that's actually the Office 2010 Professional that you purchased from Microsoft, downloaded onto your computer, onto your desktop of your Windows operating system. When you double-clicked on it, that installed Office 2010 onto your computer. I would save that file. And more than likely, when you downloaded that from Microsoft, they also sent you an email with a license key. Right? Save the file somewhere on your computer, preferably like downloads or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say in downloads. That's where you park those.
Better yet, I put those on a flash drive that I have because flash drives are cheap, 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 cheap. You can buy
a flash drive just for folks to tell me what it is.
Little thumb drive, flash drive, a USB flash drive that plugs into your computer that, and it's very similar to what you put in your cameras and camcorders now. Mm-hmm. You can get a 32 gig for $10.
Yeah,
they're so cheap.
Right. So, if yes, Jerry, you do want to, first of all, you don't want to remove that from your computer. You can take it off of the desktop if you want to put it into the download folder. As a matter of fact, Jerry, I bet you'll find that that file on your desktop is just a shortcut. And if you take that, put it into the download file. Or, as Ed says, put it off onto a thumb drive. Now, if it's a shortcut, it won't do you much good on the thumb on a thumb drive unless you're connected to your computer. Because a shortcut just is saying that it's a like a pointer or a bookmark that points to something else on the computer. So, thank you, Jerry, for that question. I hope for other people who are using that Office 2010, if you've heard that X17-75238. That is a download that's part of your Office 2010. Okay, let's go to another question we have here. This one comes from John, who identifies himself as Youper. He has an older Gateway laptop, 6-7 years old, running XP. Now, here's he said, when I turn it on and it goes through its checklist, it comes up with a flag that says its web protection is down or out of date. He's using Avira, free antivirus, and its status window, web protection, is in red. An indication usually that something's going wrong. When I update the program, it doesn't fix that issue. That's as far as I go, and then I turn off the computer. The last two times I tried to do an update, that's as far as I go. Within a few days, I've gotten a call from Microsoft saying that my computer is sending out a message that there's something wrong with my computer, that it has a nasty bug in it. So let's deal with a couple of things that we have here. We'll deal with two parts. One is the Avira software, and the other is the call, allegedly, from Microsoft. So who wants to start with the Avira?
I'll just in general. If you're having trouble with a free piece of software, that there's lots of other alternatives, just uninstall that one and install something else. I would install Microsoft Security Essentials if you're running Windows 7. If you're on XP, which he is, you could go to AVG, Avast.
And some of the other ones, those are free. Avast.
Yeah, that's it.
Those Avira, are the two.
You know, those three.
Avira's there. But how do you deal with it? Like, he's updating Avira and it's not working.
It may be not Avira that's actually causing that error message. It could be the actual virus that's doing it.
But the point is that he doesn't, I mean, he can go to a different antivirus program. That's the easiest, right?
And I would also download Malwarebytes and scan his computer because it's quite possible, it's not out of the realm of possibility that the virus that he has, you know, is actually phoning home to these people somehow. and they're initiating a call to him because they're generating the error message on your computer. But I wouldn't know how they would get his home phone number.
And it's not Microsoft.
And it's not Microsoft.
Now, so two things, folks. Two things. We want to separate these two things here.
It's not
because
Microsoft.
Some of you have written to us and called us on the show about getting these calls from Microsoft. And how do they know that it's my computer and that I got... Folks, it's a scam.
Yeah.
Microsoft will never call you out of the blue, nor any of these other people who call up and say, I'm from the FBI or whoever.
Yeah. I'm from your internet service provider. I'm from Comcast or I'm from Charter. You know what? Give me your phone number. Let me call you back.
Yeah.
If you think it might be true, that's exactly right. And I would do the same.
Yeah. On the way over here, I was telling Ed about I got a call from somebody about my insurance. And just out of the blue, they were calling and asking for my personal data, my contact information. I said, give me your number. Yeah. I will call Blue Cross Blue Shield. I did. I said, these folks have called me. Here's the number. He went away, came back, and he said, they're okay. They're a subcontractor, and they're just handling this particular part of your insurance. So there was no problem with it. But that's, folks, what you got to do with these things. Don't let a call out of the blue, a cold call, catch you and scare you, because it's just another way that they're trying to hustle you.
It's like a deer in the headlights, you know?
Yeah. So, Ed, what probably happened here, we don't know, but in all likelihood, because we've seen this before, somebody got some malware onto this person's computer, right? And it phoned home, and it said, aha, I'm in, and I will give you the name and a little bit of information about this person. Then they call back and say they're from Microsoft. They're not. They're getting more information, and now they can start to really do, you know, it's the big con, right?
So basically, you have a virus problem. That's, John, that's the bottom line, is you have something that's gotten enough in your system to do
either that. Either that or it's a heck of a coincidence. It could be just a coincidence. I really don't know how a virus can extract that specific information about phone numbers and stuff like that, and here's your computer type.
They would get enough information and then get the phone number some other way.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
Yes.
So here we would say, basically, first of all, don't respond to those kind of things. The secondly is first of all, is download another kind of a security program, like a Microsoft Security Essentials. Although, as you said, Gary, with XP, it doesn't work with that.
Go to AVG or Avast.
AVG or Avast. Another free software.
Avast.
Download them.
Avast.
Download them. Go offline. Get rid of the Avira. Uninstall it. Reboot your computer and then install the other antivirus software. So Avast or whatever else it may be, and put that in and see if you can. If you can get back rolling again with that, okay? But basically, it sounds like you do have something going on in there, a virus of some kind, but it's not don't listen to those people calling you and telling you that they're there to
Microsoft.
Help you. I'm from the government.
Microsoft.
I'm here to serve you or help you, whatever it is. Hey, guys, thanks so much for helping us to answer these questions. Once more, if you have a question during the week that you'd like to answer and you can't get to us live on our home station in Detroit when we're on the air there, you can get to us through our Contact Us form on the page, and you can also get to us through our forums where you can put your questions as well. And thanks, Gary and Ed, for answering those questions. All right, a quick break. When we come back, rev your engines up. We're going to be wrapping up this week of the North American International Auto Show with some great conversation with Paul Eisenstein, who is an excellent analyst of the auto industry from thedetroitbureau.com. And we'll also be talking with Dr. Justin Coven from IT Maturity, a futurologist, about the future of our cities and our lives in general as cars are changing along with computers. Matter of fact, it's kind of hard to tell the difference between the two. Back shortly. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Hello, Foster Brown with you, and welcome to our second hour. You say, wait a minute, I haven't heard the other hour. If you get our podcast, you will. We are delighted to be with you here and live on our flagship station, WJR in Detroit. We'll be talking this hour about cars, the auto show, with Paul Eisenstein of the Detroit Bureau, and also with Dr. Justin Coben, taking a look into the crystal ball and looking down the road a bit, literally, at what our cars will be like and how that will affect us in general. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Now, I kind of teased beforehand. You say, wait a minute, I got shortchanged. I missed the first one. Our program, by the way, is heard on a network throughout the state of Michigan, the Michigan Radio Network. And if you go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, on Sunday night, you'll be able to find our podcast of the 2 hours of our program. We talked in the first hour about some of the news, things that are going on, and specifically about dealing with viruses and malware and helping some folks out with their problems. This hour of the program, we're going to focus on what in Detroit has been, the city that put America on wheels, if you will. The thing that we talk about most when we talk about Detroit in many ways. We think of Detroit as the motor city. So the North American International Auto Show is here. It's wrapping up this week, the last week this last weekend in January of 2013. And what I thought we'd do, because it is such a big event and it has an impact beyond just being a big show here, many of the things that are going on down there really are touching on the future. And so my guest in this segment of our program is going to be Paul Eisenstein, who's been with us on many occasions. He is with the DetroitBureau.com, where he does auto analysis all throughout the year. Paul, thank you so much for joining Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Riddell here on the Internet Advisor.
Hey, Foster. Good to be with you.
Thank you so much. And guys, I don't know if you've had a chance to visit the auto show, but it's Detroit's really big show. And I know, Paul, you have not only visited the show, but you've also been very involved in testing these vehicles as well. Just kind of quickly to start off with, what are some of the things that have struck you most from this auto show 2013?
Well, in the broadest sense, there are a lot of things that are catching my eye. You have some extraordinarily strong products at this show. They've made a lot of headlines, and for good reasons. You're breaking ground with vehicles like the new Corvette C7, some of the concept vehicles that we saw there, from the Acura MDX to the Cadillac ELR, breaking new grounds in terms of plug-in hybrids, moving that into the luxury segment.
Mm.
So there's so many different things at this show that I think anybody who either reads about or, if they're lucky, gets to go down to it will really find wonderful and interesting.
Now, Paul, one of the things I want to tie together, since we talk technology here primarily, it was fascinating to me that at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, that happened in Las Vegas earlier this month, one of the fascinating things was the amount of auto technology that was there. And we kind of have seen at the Detroit Auto Show as well this boom in electronics. And I kind of gave the title to the program, Infotainment. Can't live with it, can't live without it.
Yes, you're absolutely right. One of the interesting things that we see today is that Anybody building cars, I mean, these are even down to some of the small specialty makers, they are putting a tremendous amount of emphasis on building in all sorts of high-tech electronics. Now, we'll talk some more about some of the things that are happening, mm-hmm. safety and other technologies. But let's focus on, as you said, infotainment, the stuff that you have that gives you information, such as navigation or things that help you drive the car, and of course entertainment. We're seeing some of these incredibly high-end audio systems. They're all being blended together into some of the most incredible technology. And what's really cool is that in many cases they are being designed to integrate, to basically connect with and work with your smartphone.
Right.
Now, to your point about can't live with it, can't live without it. Well, automakers know that if they don't have really good infotainment technology, they're probably going to lose a lot of buyers. And of course, the Gen Y, the millennials, definitely expect this. But even old folks like myself, you know, from the I was going to say something else. I'll be polite. Old
folks is okay.
You know, the baby boom.
Yeah.
We want that technology
absolutely.
As well. But here's the flip side. Unfortunately, one of the highest sources of complaints, in fact, currently the highest source single source of complaints about today's cars, according to J.D. Power, you know, the gurus of, mm-hmm. of automotive quality, have to do with problems related to those infotainment systems.
Mm. Now, have the problems been, well, they've been varied. There have been a lot of different kinds of problems there. Let me ask you one question, but we're going to be taking a break in just a minute. Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau was with us. He's an auto analyst that we've had on a number of times before. And by the way, if you want to find the Detroit Bureau, you can go to our InternetAdvisor.net homepage, and you find a link to that as well. Paul, one of the things that strikes me, Paul, and guys, feel free to chime in on this, is it's almost like with the car industry now, we're seeing each one of the car industries kind of trying to reinvent the infotainment wheel. You have yes. Ford with their MySync. What is the one for GM? Is
OnStar.
OnStar. My Chevy Link. Which takes it a step further than OnStar. OnStar was the beginning technology,
right.
But it's now part of a broader system.
But you have all these, you know, it's you connect with the Chrysler vehicles. So
right.
You have all these separate languages. Are we running into the problem where, you know, they really are reinventing the wheel, each in their own little segment?
In a way, yes. I know it drives a lot of the app people crazy, the folks that are designing smartphones apps for smartphones, who then would like to get, in many cases, their app to be able to work in the car space by connecting the smartphone to the infotainment system. And that's where some interesting people, including one company locally, are
yes.
trying to get in and help come up with technology that will make it easier
yeah,
for the app providers
Livio,
to link with
yeah.
the cars.
Exactly. Livio was mm-hmm. the company we've introduced. We've had them on here over the years. They've kind of morphed from being an app developer now to being somebody who helps these systems all talk to one another. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Paul Eisenstein's with us from the Detroit Bureau. We're going to be talking about the auto industry, what's been happening at the show, and things like safety and the screens inside our vehicles and voice control. Lots of stuff, including autonomous vehicles. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, our auto show special. It's kind of wrapping up the week of the auto show here in Detroit, the North American International Auto Show 2013. And in many ways, a celebration, guys, of the auto industry's rebound. And I think that's been part of the dance, because many years it was almost like a funeral being down there.
You know, absolutely. And, you know, we were talking as we went into the break about all of the different manufacturers doing something slightly differently in the infotainment space. Hmm. But that's what we want, right? Because we don't know which one's the
right,
best.
Right.
And it's only going to be by trial and error of all these big companies that we're going to find that some are better than others.
Ed, if there was one piece of infotainment you would want to have in your vehicle, what would it be?
Not drive? That I could just have the vehicle? No, I just don't want to drive
Serious?
My vehicle.
Serious?
I want to be able to watch movies and kick back for the hour drive it takes me to get from Ortonville to the Rent Center every day.
So, Paul Eisenstein, quickly, how close are we to an autonomous vehicle here from what you've seen at the auto show?
The reality is, we're hearing people like the CEO of the operation at Google developing this car, claiming that they could have some of these vehicles in production by the end of the decade.
Wow. Wow. And I know we had mentioned before that there's a program in Ann Arbor, but also in Nevada. The state of Nevada has now allowed autonomous vehicles, am I right, in California?
Yeah. Nevada was the first state to actually pass a unique licensing program.
That's right.
By the way, all the cars that drive autonomously out there will have the Infinity symbol on their license, but hopefully it means that they don't believe that it'll take forever to get this to actually work.
You mean R2-D2 has to have a license to drive?
Know, I think they should have a big siren on the roof that says, "Here I come."
Yeah.
Like Scoop
Driver. Well,
you know,
it's interesting you mention that, because we are seeing a new standard go into place very soon that will require electric vehicles, when operating in electric drive, and that could include plug-in hybrids, mm-hmm. to actually make noise
yes.
so people can hear them. So
yes.
You're not that far off base. But, yeah, I think we're going to be seeing some level of autonomy where it's true hands-off driving by the end of the decade, if not sooner. But the thing is, you asked earlier about technology, and infotainment's only part of this.
Yes.
The reality is, if you're going to go down to the show, what you're going to find are an incredible number of new features that allow vehicles to watch out for pedestrians,
right.
stop if necessary, to look into blind spots, a number of vehicles now have systems that will not only advise you when there's something in the blind spot or give you a beep if you are drifting over your lane, mm-hmm. but will actually help steer you back into your lane.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of scary. Yeah. Now, Paul, I want to stop you for a second because I remember the early days of ABS, the automatic braking systems, you know, and how probably most of us in the room here are old enough to remember that the rule of the thumb was when we were driving here in the north with the snow and the ice is you gently tap. You just, you know, periodically tap the brake rather than slamming on the brake because that would send you into a spin and would just, you know, you'd be right into the telephone pole. ABS comes out and they say to us, no, no, what you want to do now is stomp on that brake because we'll take care of pulsing that for you. Mm-hmm. And it took us a long time to learn this kind of thing.
It took 5 to 10 years for almost a generation for adults of our age to get used to that, basically.
Do you think that's absolutely happening here now? You think that's happening here now, Paul?
In some cases, yes. It is a learning curve. One of the things manufacturers are struggling to figure out is exactly how to advise drivers when things are happening in the car. So some cars, I drove a Japanese car just a week ago that made me crazy. I finally turned the system off because of the absolutely obnoxious beep, 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 beep every time I neared the lane, even didn't cross it, but just got close.
Yeah, that's
Cadillac is going the other extreme. They've come up with a seat shaker. So if, for example, you're drifting out of your lane or you want to turn it and there's somebody in your blind spot, it'll actually shake and you'll feel it in your seat, left.
Is it the left cheek or the right cheek?
Yeah. Talk about driving by the seat of your pants, right?
Well, some people may want to start running into things with that seat.
Good point. Hey, you know, Paul, I'm really curious. You said that that was somewhat annoying, though the one instance where you just had to turn off some of the warning signals. What's the insurance company's position on a number of these? It seems to me that there's almost as much distraction as there is help here.
Well, now, let's be careful because there's so many different things out here. The insurance companies absolutely adore some of the new technology. Mm-hmm. So these days, anti-lock brakes and electronic stability control are must. Now, they're required by law, too, and the feds have said that they have been saving thousands of lives, and that's only with them partially rolled out as standard. So you're going to see that increase, and insurance companies love it. All the studies show that the forward collision warning systems, particularly those that operate in city environments, low speeds, and can even bring the car to a halt, are definitely reducing the rate of accidents, lowering the cost and damage done by accidents at low speeds. The insurance companies are absolutely recommending that.
And they use radar, I think, too.
Well, I was going to say that that's perfect for the texting generations that completely ignore the laws and text or read emails when they're driving.
Yeah,
and a technology like that was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's where the insurance companies get a little bit more iffy. The data on, for example, blind spot intervention is still a little question mark. It could be that it's an adaptation rate similar to what happened in the early days with ABS when there were actually briefly an increase in accidents because people didn't know what to do, so they lifted off of ABS instead of pressing harder. That may be happening with some of the other technologies.
Yeah.
Infotainment and how those systems work, that's where the big debate is.
Yeah.
What's the right way to make it work?
Now, Paul,
should you do it by touch? Should you do it by voice?
There you go.
Should you do it by knobs? Should you do it? Who knows?
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of that whole interactive thing, and we're not going to have enough time to talk about the voice control, things like that. I want you to talk a little bit about how our gauges are changing and what you've seen at the auto show, because that's fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Well, you look at the new Corvette, and here's a car that now has a bunch of different LED or OLED, organic light emitting diode displays. So in many new cars right now, instead of having your conventional gauge cluster right between the wheel, you have a display, and it can be reconfigurable, which is really nice in a car like that, because I can change the way that the display works, whether I'm on track, I just am driving on the street, or I'm somebody who likes a little bit more aggressive driving. There's a second display in the center console where all the infotainment systems are that is, they claim, the brightest display ever put in an automobile.
Wow.
Very, very good display. But one of the interesting things about the Corvette, there was a big fight internally, and Helen Emsley, who ran the system, won. it does have a lot of knobs. Not a lot, but it kept critical knobs. So, for example, volume and tuning, temperature and fan, and if I recall, I believe even their seat heaters actually have real, live, honest buttons so that when your seat starts to overheat, you don't have to try to go through five different levels on the screen. Yep. You get to that button real quickly.
And that's a whole interaction issue. Paul, we've run out of time here, and there's so much more to talk about. But it sounds like in all the things we've been talking about, we are in kind of an interim period between the time when, basically it was up to the driver to drive to now where it's coming to the place where soon it will be what the car is going to allow us to do in driving.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having been with us, Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau. You will find that thedetroitbureau.com. If you go to internetadvisor.net on our homepage, you will find the link to that. Paul, thanks so much for being here and for giving us just a little bit of a glimpse on some of the incredible technologies that are affecting the cars down there at the show and our future as well.
Been a pleasure to be with you. Good. Hope to again.
Yes, we will have to talk with you again soon. Matter of fact, as we're coming up with some of these technologies, we'll have to get back and talk with you again in the near future. Guys, we're going to be transitioning in just a moment to talk about, if you will, casting our gaze even further into the future. Dr. Justin Coven is with us, and we're going to be talking about this whole business of autonomous vehicles and making this transition to a time when Ed can be in Ortonville and just sit back as his car takes him, with his tucking out, ever touching the wheel, takes him downtown Detroit to his job. Right, Ed? That's what we're looking for. Something to make that happen. Him and the whole carpool. Back in just a moment to talk with Dr. Justin Coven here on the Internet Advisor. And thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor, allowing us into your home. Don't forget to check InternetAdvisor.net out, our homepage, for all sorts of information about the show notes, people we're talking to on our program. Like our guest in studio right now, Dr. Justin Coven. He is the CEO and founder of IT Maturity. He has his degree in computer science from Arizona State University, and he specializes in artificial intelligence and systems that reason about themselves. It's kind of funny in the sense that we've been talking about cars and how much more of the reasoning they do for us. Dr. Coven, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Isn't it interesting? We're talking about artificial intelligence. There's a lot more intelligence that's being built into our vehicles, isn't there?
Yes, it's coming. There's an actual history. People have been working on this for decades. Back in the 80s, it was a surprise when somebody was doing 100 feet. And then come early 2004, people were doing several, thousand feet. So there
now, was that part of
the
Defense Department, DARPA?
In mid-2004, DARPA had a challenge that they put out.
Right, in the desert, wasn't it?
Yeah. Uh-huh, and that was the big change. As opposed to doing just a few thousand feet, one of the teams accomplished 7 miles. They went, this was a big change. This was like an order of magnitude
and
difference.
Driving down roads, this isn't driving across the Bonneville Salt Flats. This is traversing roads with other traffic?
This was dirt roads. Okay. So they stayed.
It was in the desert, too, as I remember.
It was in the desert. They stayed away from other vehicles. During the competition, one of the vehicles was catching up to another, and they said, well, it's been catching up for so long, we got to pull the other one over because it really is passing, and they let it pass.
Uh-huh.
So it eventually won. But that was in 2005. 2004, they got 7 miles. 2005, just 1 year change, going from 7 miles, they went 130 miles.
Wow.
And it wasn't just one team. There were six teams that actually finished the course.
Oh, wow, six finished. Wow.
And one of them was very surprising because it was from Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
and they had just gone through a hurricane. That university was actually in the heart of that, yet they...
Katrina had just come through,
and they were actually able to get everything together, get to the competition, and finish the course.
Amazing, amazing. So that was in 2005.
And then there was another big competition, again by DARPA. They called it the Urban Challenge. And they said, well, let's see if you can do with other vehicles. And surprise, they were able to do it. So another major jump in just a few short years, they were able to actually finish, I think it was about 80 miles. And there were, again, about half a dozen vehicles that actually finished the competition successfully.
And this was in traffic?
other cars,
okay.
Stop signs, no traffic lights,
okay.
No pedestrians.
Okay.
So there were some, you know, restrictions, but the complexity level was pretty much the level that you would expect to have vehicles on the road.
Now, Dr. Corbin, have we gotten to the place where a car is actually able to drive itself in stop-and-go traffic in an urban situation?
Well, you know, you listen to Google, they say they've done a 250,000 miles of roads.
Wow.
They've had vehicles out on the roads for 250,000 miles. And there are a lot of other people working on this. I mean, obviously small colleges, universities are able to do it, so a lot of other people are able to do it. So there's a lot happening in the background. General Motors, actually, for the last 5 years, they've been targeting 2018, saying that's about when they're going to be introducing autonomous vehicles onto the road, and you know everybody else is there. You know, GM did. They were actually part of the winners of the Urban Challenge. They were part of the team along with Carnegie Mellon.
You know, and we did hear that Paul Eisenside in the last segment said that as he talks to some of the major executives in the auto, both domestically and foreign, they're saying that by the end of this decade, so 2020. They expect to have production cars on the road.
There, yeah. Right? GM was saying 2018.
GM may beat them to it, and they may move it up.
You won't have to wait long, Ed. You won't have to wait long for that.
Well, you know, the hard part
autonomous carpool
is you're going to have many different generations of vehicles on there. You'll have the autonomous ones and the ones that are not autonomous. And so it'll be probably the coexistence period is going to be 10 years, 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
Maybe even more than that. How do you see us making that transition, Dr. Corbin?
Exactly as you're talking about it, there will be some vehicles that will be autonomous, some that won't. Part of the transition is going to be it's going to hit. It's similar to what happened a century ago. We transitioned from horses to cars.
Oh, that's a good point.
And so this is nothing new. I mean, our culture has faced that challenge. We're going to go through a similar challenge. People who made buggy whips. They're out of business.
Yeah.
Well, they still make buggy rips, just a lot fewer.
A lot fewer.
and they still ride horses, but they do them in a special place. Is that what we're going to see? Is if say 2 decades from now, you want to drive a vehicle, you pull one out of the museum and you go out but you have certain places that you can drive.
Yeah, like a carnival or a museum.
Like a
special lane just for humans.
Yeah.
There's going to be some of that, but for at least for the next few decades, it's going to be pretty open, and people will get used to it bit by bit. But you've got pedestrians, so autonomous vehicles really have to deal with other things besides other autonomous vehicles. There are some people who are doing research where they actually have autonomous vehicles going through a cross section, and they're zooming by each other because one slows down a little and lets the other go by. I mean, they're
at high speeds. They can go through
high
an intersection.
Speeds, they don't need the light. Because they can
Holy
be aware of whatever the rules are, or they can be communicating with the cross section. So one goes by and just slows down a little, the other one goes full speed. So there are things like that can happen, but they're going to have to be aware of pedestrians and other things. Sure. But we have freeways, so we are going to have special things. You know, pedestrians can't go on freeways.
So you bring up a very good point. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to find out who's building traffic lights, and I'm not investing there right now.
That's an interesting point.
Because they're
yes.
not going to need them at some point in the future. Yeah. What else is going to be affected?
Well, think of it. Okay, how many people are actually in the business of driving vehicles?
Well, there's taxi cab drivers and limo drivers, right?
Yep.
And
there's all semi truck drivers for. All that. I mean, that's the business.
Right. Trucks are obviously more complex, so they will be a little longer before, we
but
have
who really enjoys
trucks.
It? I mean, it's a necessity getting to point A to point B.
Yeah, right. But you can enjoy it on a Sunday afternoon out somewhere, away from all the traffic, but most of us, it's commuting time, right?
How many people ride horses nowadays?
Yeah.
So a lot
just
of
on
people
Sunday afternoon when it's enjoyable out in the country. Yeah,
and it's interesting. If you use the analogy of horses nowadays, it's a much more expensive proposition to own a horse and to ride it than it is a car,
So what's a soccer mom going to do? Right? You just, instead of picking up the kids, you send the car to go do it.
Well.
Right? So there's leisure time activities
How about parking should change, shouldn't it?
Parking garages. Yeah, your vehicle is going to come up to the front door, drop you off, go and do another task. There are people who are actually
So it wouldn't necessarily be just my vehicle. I don't have to own a car then.
You don't have to. You could have a service. They actually have people right now. You can actually rent out your vehicle to somebody else on the internet.
Is that Zipcar?
Well, Zipcar is one, but Dr. Coven, you're talking about I could rent out my private car, right?
You could. That's going to be part of the transition. People are going to do that. But eventually, you're likely going to get to a service because how much effort do you want to put into maintaining a vehicle that drives itself? We were restricted before because we really sort of – we had to have a driver. But without the driver, we don't have that restriction. You don't have to have a universal vehicle that does 15 different tasks. You can have a specific vehicle just to take you, so it can have one seat, or you could have a two-seater. There are going to be services out there that, you know, say, we're going to get you a new vehicle every day, every month, for the rich and fancy who always want to be elegantly driven. Yeah. Other people, they're going to say, just give me a generic service. If you can have a vehicle at my door within 2 or 3 minutes of when I want to leave.
And it can read my Outlook calendar and find out when I have to be there.
Oh, I love that. Right? But Ed, your situation, for instance, your vehicle goes from your house down to the Rensen, right?
Right.
The center of town. And it's parked.
It's parked there for 9 or 10 hours. Yeah. So that could be used by someone else at that
point. And you don't need a parking structure near the Rensen because, you know, that's just for your convenience.
I just get this
picture. It could drop you off and go park somewhere else. And, oh, by the way, you don't have to fill up – you don't have to go to the corner gas station to fill up gas because while you're working, it's going to go fill up on its own, right? Or it's going to go to a master garage.
Oh, my gosh. I get this picture in my mind of me whistling and say, you know, come here, Trigger, you know, something like that. That's great.
Voice commands. I love it. No, Siri, bring my car. Or whatever the voice command. Go ahead, doctor.
What about your house? How is that going to change? Are you going to need a garage?
You're going
to get more space in your home. You're going to be able to leverage
invest
that.
In home improvements companies. Yeah.
That's probably a good idea because this is just one of many different technologies.
Oh, I love this. This is fascinating.
Hey, I just – a flash. No more speeding tickets for me.
There we go. And less accidents, less death. Oh, we've got to keep on talking here. Dr. Justin Coben is with us. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about more things like what happens to public transportation when the vehicles drive themselves. Some of the things we're talking about here on the Internet Advisor. I would like to take a moment and thank the people that you don't hear on the air. And that is people like Rich Luzinski and Scott Iometta, who are our engineers. Thank you very much for making Eddie's birthday broadcast so wonderful. And also Annie Nichols, our lady of the telephones. And thanks so much, Annie. She has been working behind the scenes to help us here, as she does every week. Also an announcer on one of our sister stations. So
you can hear her smile when she talks to you.
You certainly can. We've been talking here with Dr. Justin Coven from a company called IT Maturity, and we've been kind of doing what I call Jetson conversations from George Jetson. And I remember as a kid growing up, the cartoon that was there about floating cars. And I've always wondered where my floating car was, my air car was. But in any case, Dr. Coven, you are the founder and CEO of IT Maturity. And while we've been talking about the car and just, you know, ideating about that, you actually spent a lot of time thinking about not just this, but a lot of other things. Why don't you tell us what IT Maturity is?
Okay, so I mentioned before the break that there's a lot of other things that IT is changing. I mean, IT has been used to change
information technology.
Information technology has been used to change how we communicate with each other, how we're entertained, how we socialize. We're now getting into an era of automation where we have automated vehicles. The same technology that's gone into automated vehicles, basically you have moderate sensors, moderate actuators, moderate communications, and then complex computation. That same thing can be put into automated kitchens, to automated gardens, automated delivery. There's a lot of other things that IT is going to change. And what my company is focused on, and you can sort of think of it as an analogy to social media. From a social perspective, people communicate in a specific way. Mm-hmm. Well, in an enterprise, people communicate in a very different way and need to communicate in a very different way.
Right.
And that's what our specialty is. We have a slew of tools for the maturation, using IT to mature enterprises and the communication within an enterprise. We call it enterprise media or leadership media.
So you're helping companies keep up with this kind of unfolding future that's coming very quickly to us.
Those are elements, but there are also things that you can put in to an enterprise to help people communicate from a business perspective.
Better.
You know, escalation, delegation, are they working on problems?
So you're working within the businesses to help them have that happen. We've been kind of talking, it's funny, we were just recapping during the break. Isn't it astounding, guys, that 2004, that DARPA challenge was how many miles, 7 miles?
2004, they made 7 miles,
right.
Didn't finish. In 2005, six finished the entire course, 130 miles.
And now we've gotten to 8 years later, we're in a place where right now, this moment, in Nevada and in California, autonomous vehicles are driving themselves. Now, they have engineers sitting with them in the vehicles, right?
I suspect it's happening on our roads,
but,
too.
But, yeah, exactly. Matter of fact, I understood that in the Ann Arbor area, there's a project that's been going on for a number of years out of the University of Michigan.
Yeah, they're not automated vehicles. What they are is sensing vehicles. So they're taking all, and it's a big data problem, right? They're taking all the sensing from 3,000 vehicles that are happening primarily in northeast Ann Arbor, but obviously, in fact, Carol, my wife, has some of the sensing technology in our van, and so we're part of that that test.
But all of this is moving to the place. I mean, you have to have your vehicle be able to sense what's happening around it and interact with it.
That's right.
And interact with the other vehicles as well, Doctor.
That's a possibility, and people are working on that. But there are also people saying, "Well, what happens in a disaster? We want that vehicle to be able to handle itself." So it's probably going to be part of the solution that the vehicle is going to be able to do the whole thing on its own in emergency situations.
You mentioned disasters, though. Let's talk about something that's a big problem, drunk driving. What's going to happen to drunk driving?
Well, there are about 2 million arrests a year for drunk driving. Are we going to have a concern with it? Is it going to be an issue if the vehicles are driving themselves?
Yeah.
How many prisons do we have? How many police are giving out traffic tickets? How many people are in hospitals? There's about 400,000 people in hospitals a year because of accidents.
So we're going to have less traffic policemen or police officers on the roads, but more drunks? Is that?
Well, they're not going to be concerned because they're in a vehicle that drives itself.
Wow. Then all of our insurance rates would go down.
There you go.
What insurance?
Do you need insurance?
Do you need insurance?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, I could just picture, a couple weeks from now, I'm going up skiing with the Boy Scouts, and why couldn't I connect my autonomous vehicle to another autonomous vehicle and let the boys walk back and forth between them?
No.
Well, that's just silly.
the shape of the vehicle is going to change.
Yeah, that's a good
we've
point.
We've had a uniform shape.
Yes,
and
we don't need a steering wheel.
As it evolves, it's potential that you're going to have a small electric vehicle that operates in your neighborhood. It's going to be able to go outside of the neighborhood and connect potentially to a larger vehicle that can then go the greater distance. And there's going to be all different types of transitions. We don't know how that's going to work.
Right.
I mean, that's an engineering thing.
But this whole shape of the car, I like that. The whole shape of the car will change.
Changes.
So it's really much friendlier to being a vehicle that conveys you.
You don't need
in a train. I don't have a steering wheel,
right?
Because what do you think it'll do to public transportation then?
It's going to merge into sort of the same thing. Why are you going to need a special bus when you can have a service that's providing that? And people who need to be subsidized, they're going to have a subsidy on it. But are you going to need the government to do it when there's going to be all these businesses out there working on this?
So many things change, like tow trucks.
garages.
You
still might need something like that.
But
I'm thinking, what's going to happen when I get out of my vehicle at work? I've got my gym bag in the trunk because I'm going to go stop by the gym on the way home. I'm going to need a place to check that. So there's got to be a room now where I can check some of the stuff that I would normally just leave in my car, but I won't be able to because my car's going somewhere
else.
You
know what blows my mind?
And maybe luggage has to change.
I think purses are going to come back in.
Man purses.
That's it. And valets or something, but not because they're going to call your vehicle. Well, maybe they do call your vehicle, but they also then check your bag.
Wow. And also your smartphone then, Doctor, I'm going to guess, would also be connected, or whatever device you're wearing.
Just like there's going to be a lot of transitions with autonomous vehicles and other things, the smart device is going to change. Right now, we've gone from desktops to laptops, now to smartphones. and we're starting to plug those phones into, you know, screens and speakers and all sorts of things. So it's sort of like a universal device that you're probably going to have in your pocket, and you're going to be able to connect to anything and everything wirelessly.
What's so fascinating to me, you used the analogy before of what happened when we went from a horse-driven economy, which had been going on for millennia, you know, as long as horses were domesticated and available for that, to a place where we're talking about autonomous vehicles. You talked about the change that took place in the societies. Guys, my head is hurting right now from all of the things. And think, this has happened in 8 years, just in 8 years. And we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg of the thing. You mentioned automated kitchens, automated houses, automated everything. If you think, folks, this is foolish nonsense, it's happening now. It's going on right now.
Well, and it's happening faster than the last major change.
Right? Absolutely.
It took a lot longer to have vehicles replace horses than it's going to take autonomous vehicles to replace vehicles.
So what kind of pressures does that put on businesses?
Huge pressures to keep up, because there's going to be transitions not just along one stream, because, you know, the vehicle is going to change, the vehicle shape, how you're entertained in the vehicle is going to change, but you know, the kitchen's going to change, restaurants are going to change. All of these structures are going to change at the same time, so the pressures are going to be immense, and that's part of what my business does, helps businesses make that transition to be aware of what's happening.
Dr. Justin Coven, thank you so much for being with us. He's the CEO and founder of IT Maturity. You can find out more about him and about the company online at internetadvisor.net. We've got to have you back to talk more about
this. I'd love to.
I'm getting ready for my flying car. I already am. Eddie, happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Foster.
And
thank you, Gary.
Gary, thank you so much for being in studio.
Next week is our 15th anniversary show.
Wow. Talk about time flying. Our anniversary show coming up next week. I hope you'll join us for that, folks. And thank you once again to Rich Lisinski and to Scott Iometta, engineers, and Annie Nichols, our lady of the telephones, for making this thing happen. Folks, thank you very much for allowing us into your lives with the Internet Advisor. Please go to internetadvisor.net to get more information about the show and to subscribe to our podcast. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally-produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.